CosmicRadio.tv. This podcast would be nothing without our patrons, so special thanks goes out to them. Want to join their ranks and support independent content? Head to our Patreon at patreon.com/8bitlife. Welcome to Fine Edition of My So-Called 8-Bit Life. I'm your host, Roberto Vegas. Joining me today, let's go through it. We have singer, musician, actress, geek, gamer, podcaster, tea enthusiast, Christy Cates. I know I missed a couple there.
I may be a bit overambitious. No, I don't think I am.
I missed, I think, badminton player and what was the other thing I read on the credits that was on your resume that was weird? Basic sword play person.
I think. A what?
Well, because I was listening. So let me preface all this. Usually whenever I get a guest on, I do research and everything else and kind of figure things out. And more importantly, you know, we've had a million different types of guests on the show, Christy. We've had, of course, podcasters, artists, writers, musicians. I've even had a few animators on the show. I think this is the first time I've had a guest that's been on the show that if I asked, you know, so what are you, musician, this, that you would just check all the above?
I think, well, the thing is I actually think music is my primary thing that I love to do. Right. I mean, it's what I've always done. It's my focus. I write songs. I sing songs. I feel like that's the best way that I communicate. But at the same time, you know, if you're going to take music and put it in the center, there are so many other things that revolve around that and so many ways to be creative. And I've had so many opportunities just to do cool things, and they're fun things. I don't really wish to say no if I think I'm capable of doing it somewhat well, or at least being able to try it or learn. I think that's a fun thing to do. So, yeah, I'm grateful I get to do a lot of things.
Especially that, just because, you know, I mean, I always tell friends of mine whenever they ask me like advice on doing something, and I usually will give them the disclaimer of, if it's going to sound cool, I'm probably not going to say don't do it. Exactly. If you want to have someone that says not to do something that's creative or ambitious or sounds interesting, I'm not the person to ask. Like, ask somebody else who will tell you no if you are like on the fence and you really don't want to do it. Because I'm probably going to say, that sounds amazing. Go for it.
Yeah. And the thing is, I mean, that's how you learn from one creative venture to another, is by trying them. Something like music too. For me, music is also a visual thing because I see music videos. When you get into music videos, you know, you're looking at costuming, you're looking at sets. That feeds into doing film work, which I love to do. That feeds into doing voiceover work. So it's almost like, I don't want to say it's unintentional, but it's almost like the things just kind of naturally follow each other. So if it seems fine to me to do all those things at the same time.
Yeah. I mean, especially, you know, especially now these days, because I mean, I've had enough musicians on that, you know, have had their music featured in video games or mm-hmm. you know, musicians whose claim to fame is that their song was on a TV show or something like that. And I think that's sort of what you have to do now, especially in music, that you can't quite be in this bubble anymore. Like, there used to be the day where you could have someone sort of, you know, You could do this and then make an album, and the album flourishes, and then you become a giant rock star. But I don't think that those days exist anymore, or not the same way.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think it's the same way. I think part of the appeal in being multidimensional, or, you know, I don't want to be presumptuous trying to be multidimensional, is that record labels don't have the same structure they used to. You know, the old goal when I was in high school was, you know, you would chase after a record contract. And now, at times, I don't want to knock record labels, but it's almost inadvisable to do that because you're locked into more of a structure and a format that maybe you don't want. Maybe they won't allow you to do a podcast. I wouldn't be allowed to be on Chord Killers. Well, maybe they would want me to be in a film, you know?
I think it ultimately depends on, like, your record label, though. I mean, I know there's enough indie labels out there that understand this spectrum. That understand this world. I know indie artists that do, by the way, too. Like, I mean, because if I think of a good chunk of the artists I buy, like, I was thinking in my head when it comes to music, because this is, I think it was like an article posted on Facebook from one of the pages I follow. Like if a lot of people, you know, are talking about streaming music and sort of how that's hearing musicians, like, and I think in my head, like, I tend to buy, like, if I think of where I buy my music now, it's like Bandcamp these days, and a lot of indie artists have kind of gravitated towards that distribution platform. But
okay,
it's,
well, I mean, and I don't want to sound like I was
no,
but I think you're right in that. I think, and maybe, I think major labels are going through kind of a regrowth period where right. they are kind of adjusting to this new world of how everything's functioning, because in a very quick span of time, things started really leaning on the internet, and artists really started utilizing the internet and Patreon and Twitch and all these things to, you know, to promote their own music and to put things out there and collaborate with other people. And I think maybe, I think the point that I just got from what you're saying is indie labels may be more receptive to that because they're smaller and because they came up in that marketplace. Whereas someone like a giant major label who got their start in the 40s is going to have a different viewpoint of it.
Well, because it was interesting, like my parents recently, and this just because it's a funny story, my parents recently went to a James Taylor concert, you know, James Taylor being a huge musician.
Right.
but if I think about James Taylor, he kind of grew up like being a folk singer, that kind of, or at least it sort of always got that sort of feeling.
Right.
Because like my parent, I mean, granted, my parents were in the front row and had everything else, but during the intermission, like James Taylor came out, sat down on stage and sort of like taking pictures, signing autographs and, you know, holding court, which to my mother was this completely foreign idea. She was like blown away that this musician would do that. And for me, I think in my head, I go like, I mean, I've had, you know, drummers of bands in my trunk, because, you know, for the hell of it. I've had weird stories. There've been many a times where I've hung out with the musician after a show and interview, and sometimes even interviewed them. And it's such a different thing for me, because typically when I go to concerts, it's at smaller venues and stuff like that, like a bar or even like an outdoor venue. And I'll be able to have that sort of moment.
And that's the cool thing too, is I don't want to say it's forced by competition, because I don't like the word competition in music. Because everything's so different in music. I hate it when they try to pit different genres against each other. It makes no sense to me. But I think almost, you know, in the new world that you and I are talking about right now, it's almost like, oh, well, you know, all of these people are getting out in the public and meeting them and doing more things that are face-to-face and maybe a little friendlier and like a little less mysterious than in the good old days or whatever we'd like to call it. So I almost think, I don't want to say one-upmanship. I can't quite find the right word for it, but you know what I mean? Like they're really trying to keep up with this new version of how you promote your music or how you promote your art of any sort, really.
Well, because ultimately I think every creative's desire is one, to have your work viewed or listened to or read or looked at, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Not because you want people to look at it and everything, is because you want to start this conversation. You want to try to find that person that either got what you got of making it or got something indifferent that you hadn't thought about.
It's about connections.
Right. So exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think that's the same thing with every, you know, musician or any kind of creative work, is that they also want to connect with other people who are doing it, because, I mean, you know, I can imagine, and maybe we'll just lead into a question, like every musician, everyone gets inspired to get into this. Like what got you into doing music then in the first place?
Got me into doing music?
Yeah. Like there's got to be some artist or something that you heard that, or some influence came into your life. Nothing, not because you can like go, oh, music just always came, but like, no, something usually triggers it. Usually here, like for me, you know, my first passion, my first sort of musical love would have been actually video games, would have been Nintendo and things like that. So it got me in more into chiptunes as I've gotten older. But even that led into electronica, then that spun off into punk, and then so on and so forth, the sort of weird sound. So, I mean, everyone gets sort of into something, you know, especially created that. What was your...
I think, well, I mean, I grew up with music in the household. There was always music played in our household. There was, you know, I mean, while you're cooking dinner, there was stuff on TV that was musical. There was always something going on. You know, I was allowed to purchase music really early. I think I was buying music, gosh, maybe... I don't know. I want to say like 11 or 12 years old, I was, you know, buying music. And then I actually went to school overseas for a bit when I was a kid. I went to school over in Europe and got introduced to a lot of English music. And that's kind of where the roots of what I write are. are in a lot of those English bands. And by that, I'm talking about like just Oasis, you know, the old Oasis stuff, and Blur, and the Smiths, and, you know, and I mean, the stuff that I don't know that America has totally embraced all this stuff. I know Radiohead is a huge one for me, but then smaller bands that didn't quite make it so huge over in America, like Keane or Travis. I think Fran Healy is a brilliant songwriter, along with Tom York, another brilliant songwriter. I actually really like Coldplay, who get ripped on endlessly, but if you listen to their songs, they make some really melodic, positive, uplifting songs. And I like that. I think that's a really great thing to put into music, especially right now, is, you know, positivity and just not staring at your shoes all the time. Granted, I'll enjoy some Morrissey and some Smiths. I'm not saying that's a bad thing.
But, no, for sure.
You know, you can't just constantly be downtrodden all the time. And I think a lot of these songs with the beautiful melodies and the big, huge pop hooks, you know, the Brit pop hooks, just I like that stuff.
I'm really laughing because, like, for a good semester in college.
Yeah, why are you laughing?
Well, I'll tell you why. Because during like a good semester in college, I was working at a computer lab, and I guess they trusted me to install whatever software I wanted for some reason, which is always great being the guy behind there. And if you ever work at a computer lab, people, it is literally just you're there waiting until someone says, hey, the printer's not working, or hey, X is not happening. And so, you know, you're studying, you're getting homework done, whatever. But in between that, because you always see someone kind of listen in the background, there was a way to listen to Virgin Radio out of the UK.
Yep.
And so I heard a lot of like bands before they started becoming big. Like, I think I'd heard I'm blanking the band's name, but they did, I believe, a thing called Love. Oh, fuck, what's the name of the band?
The Darkness.
I like heard about the Darkness. Yeah. Like, I had gotten
Australian, but close.
Yeah. Okay. I got played out by the Darkness before they got big at stateside, and it was like nice. When I got heard, it's like, okay, I'm done hearing the song. It's good. And then it's like, and the Darkness is here. Like, oh wow, it took them that long to get stateside. I've already heard like everything by them.
Isn't that weird? How, I mean, that space, that giant space, and it's, you think about it, and we're just crossing the pond. It's not that huge of a space, but that giant space between English bands getting big, and they have their, you know, their whole system over there, the BBC, the whole, you know, the whole culture and everything. And the one I listen to a lot is, it's called Radio X now, but it was XFM for a really long time, that British radio station. And it takes so long for stuff to cross over. And sometimes it crosses over stateside and doesn't do too much. And I'm sitting here going, these are amazing songs. These bands are structuring these great arrangements, really thoughtful lyrics, really clever stuff. And it gets over here and it just kind of plops on the ground, and I don't understand it. Well, you know,
and I don't either, because at one point I was like, I had to look through the band. What other one I kept getting played on Virgin Radio was like Stereophonic was the band.
Oh yeah, they're great. Great band.
Maybe Tomorrow specifically, and it was like I heard that's sort of what happened would be I would hear these songs in this form because I was just like, well, I'll pick a station, and Virgin was like, well, this seems kind of interesting. Let's trip here for a bit, and it just became this very weird experience of being, you know, because you'd hear this music that typically wasn't stateside and typically never got here in time, because that was still, I mean, it was, granted, it was, we had the internet and everything else, so it's not like things didn't that, but the internet wasn't as capitalized as it was, as it is now, back in like 2003, 2004, just to kind of, you know, kind of give a year to plop into.
Right.
But it was like, it was this weird experience. And so, yeah, like much like you, like I got into UK bands just through that. I mean, because I mean, I know that we, like, my musical thing really was like my parents would introduce me to classic rock. That's why I got into things like Floyd and Led Zeppelin and the Beatles and stuff like that. But on my own, it's just, you start to hear, because you're absolutely right. The English are really, really good music stuff.
Yeah. I mean, it's almost like, I don't know. You talk about different countries exporting different things. And I almost want to say that, you know, the UK exporting music may be one of their best exports ever, just because there's so much stuff that comes out of there. I mean, you've been talking, you know, back to David Bowie and Stone Roses and all that kind of stuff. So digging farther back. Yeah,
for sure. But obviously you're not just simply a musician, even though music was that. So how did that then, like, how did that, because you mentioned the idea that music sort of spawned off into things and became, you know, is encompassed in everything else. And obviously the whole thing of not saying no. How did that, like, parlay into being an actress in any capacity? Because I mean, I looked at your resume. Like, you've done like theater. You've been leads for Grease at least one time. And some
yeah, I mean,
everyone's played Sandy, but still,
It's true. Everyone has played Sandy, but it's such a fun role to play.
Maybe that's why you were, because the singer, just because of that, you know, I mean, there are some, you know, Sandy doesn't, you know, people don't be quiet and act in that movie. They sing.
That's true. theater stuff, though, it's interesting you brought that up. Theater for me isn't, I don't know how to put it. Theater is very immediate. You know, you're on stage, and it's odd to say this, I guess, because as a performing musician on stage, I love the feedback that you get immediately. I love to play a song. You know, it's cool when people recognize a song or sing along or just simply like it and applaud. That's plenty. That's great. Right. But with theater, that response is immediate. And I almost don't enjoy that as much as I do film work, because I think I like the more fantastical way film comes together. You know, when there's so many more opportunities to me to make it kind of more of its own world. One film that I worked on, and I just did ADR for it, but it was a sci-fi film called Mariah. And it was a film about a ship named Mariah that was traveling, and the people on the ship were in stasis, and the ship went through an accident, as ships in sci-fi films often do. And, you know, they got broken out of stasis. There were only two of them that survived, you know, being in cryo or whatever it was at the time. When they came out, they were floating, and they were trying to get this shipload of people who were now all gone and plants to a new planet to start a new colony. So it was an interesting concept, you know, and I got to do ADR for that, and I got to be the voice of the ship Mariah. So I was the voice of the title character. And it was just so much fun because, you know, you went into the ADR studio and they're playing the footage behind you, and you're just getting enveloped in this whole other world. And to me, for film work, you know, I've been working with an agency in New York City for a while, and they sent me out on commercial shoots, and I appreciate that, and to audition for some other shows. But a lot of what's going on as far as that kind of stuff is police procedurals and crime shows and drama shows. And, you know, I almost feel like I want to hold out and kind of work on it some more and get to where I can do. I mean, I love the Marvel universe. I love anything fantastical, you know, science fiction stuff. I adore science fiction stuff. I don't want to say fantasy movies necessarily, but, you know, things like The Martian, things like The Hunger Games, things like, you know, where you're creating a world and you're allowed to be part of that world. I just think that's so much fun to me. It's almost like play acting. I guess I just want to be a big kid for a very long time. But, you know, that's the most fun of all, is creating these different worlds and being part of it.
Well, what got you into the whole different world thing? Obviously, you know, every geek also has their beginnings too. It's like, what, because you mentioned Marvel, you mentioned all this fantastical stuff. Like, what was your introduction to geekdom, for lack of better words? There's really never a good thing, but I mean, everyone has, I say, their junction point, meaning that everyone gets their sort of like, here is your seed, and where does that seed blossom into? And like, for me, it was, you know, like I mentioned, video games, specifically Nintendo, and that sort of spawned into this,
right,
you know, thing that I am today.
Gosh, I want to say I was very much a reader. I've been a reader my whole life. I mean, I still own, even though books are becoming passe, we all have Kindles. And yes, I also have a Kindle, but I also have a giant bookshelf full of books. I think I'm up to about 400, 500 books now. I started off reading Susan Cooper and Madeleine L'Engle. And, you know, of course, I got into the Harry Potter books. And film-wise, Star Wars. I love watching Star Trek on TV. So I think you're correct, and you kind of pinpointed it. Anything that takes you to a different world. And then after you're in that world, which I love the environments of finding out what that world's about, what it looks like, you know, what does it look like? What does it feel like? Then you work on developing the characters in that world. Who are they? Why are they there? Why is this world so different? Why have they been drawn to this world? And there's just so many questions and answers to me that are so much beyond, you know, a show where there's a cop and he works on the beat. And, you know, there's so many of those shows now. And I think they're fine for people that enjoy them. I'm not drawn to that kind of world at all. I don't know why.
No, that's fair. I mean, I will admit, I do love me procedurals. That's my weird guilty pleasure.
It doesn't have to be.
It is because, like, I say it is because a lot of the time they are schlock. Like, props to Dick Wolf. He's figured out exactly what to do and how to do it and to make a ton of money doing it. And I cannot fault him at all. He's done it, and he's created a universe now with SVU and Chicago PD crossing over. Like, he's figured it out, and that's awesome.
Right.
You know, but, you know,
and I don't know if schlock is fair necessarily. I see what you're saying, but at the same time, do you find them all very similar? Because I think what part of it for me is that the plots repeat often, and the characters, there's almost like the same type of character in each one of these.
That's
you can almost count on the same.
That's sort of the only redeeming I have, and that's sort of what I was going to get to, is that a lot of times, and this might be my redeeming when it comes to even sci-fi now today, is a lot of it is, it, for me, when it comes to procedural, like I've watched many of them that I've never really liked at all. And I've watched some that I enjoy the heck out of, you know, in terms of characters. And a lot of times it becomes less important about the case, becomes less important about the story, because none of that really matters. What matters more or less is how these characters interact with each other and sort of things like that. And what they're, because again, there's every one of them have the same kind of thing. I mean, there's always a formula to this. You know, you have these, you always have this sort of lead, you always have that kind of lead, you always have these sort of things. And it depends on that. I think with certain ones, the only really differences is, can they get away with older stuff? Because I think about like some of my favorite television shows like of all time. One of them is technically could be pitched as a police procedural, but it's a British show called Life on Mars. You know, that sort of the idea is this man kind of gets into a car crash, wakes up in 1973, you know, from like to 2000. He's aware of it. He's in this past world. And so it becomes this like gritty police kind of thing set in 73, you know, London. And it has all the foibles and all the fun things that a 1973 police work can have with this character, you know, who's, you know, lost in a strange world, who's used to modern police proceedings, you know, cording off things, dusting for evidence and DNA analysis where that doesn't happen. That never happened in 73. It was entirely different. In fact, to the point where he at one point is trying to read the rights after arresting someone, going, wait, no, that's not how it was back now. And he's trying to go back in his head to remember what the equivalent of the Miranda, you know, whatever the Miranda rights would be in the UK, saying it. And it's this like really funny scene because he's like, no, that's not it. No, it's not quite that either. And it's like one of the guys, you know, the other, like the higher on editor's like, you're nicked. And then that's it. Like there's no speech anymore because it doesn't matter. It's a fun, I mean, and you know, what makes it interesting is in the fact it's policing all that stuff, but the idea that here is the other overarching story of like, how did I get back here and how do I get back home?
But see, and I appreciate that because I think, you know, like I said, I already admitted I'm not really drawn to watching those kind of shows. And that's fine because there's shows for everybody, for all different kinds of genres of shows. But that, what you just described to me sounds like good writing. And I think that's the bigger thing for me is network TV right now. There's not a lot of good writing on it. I'm sorry. You know, I when there's you've got to really dig around and dig those gems out of there because there just aren't that many of them. And when there are, like the show you just described to me, which I've heard the name of it, but I hadn't heard, you know, the synopsis. So that was really cool to hear about it. But to me, that sounds like good writing. They created they took the whole crime genre and kind of spun it and put it in a whole different light. And that's a very cool way to do it. So I think, you know, and we're talking about Marvel shows too. Daredevil for me is kind of on the edge of that. Daredevil is almost a crime show, but it's got that little Marvel edge thrown in there, you know, and it's not terribly superhero-y really. It's more about the characters in the show. And I think that's what makes it more interesting. Like you said, is the character development and the writing.
Well, cause like even the idea of the world, cause you mentioned, you know, the idea of watching a sci-fi world and stuff like for me. And the reason I'm going to kind of tie back in cause I, you know, there's another thing I kind of do want to talk about a bit.
Okay.
Because again, you mentioned a lot of things is what you list yourself as. Don't get me wrong, I'm the same way in terms of my interests. But if I think of like some games I've played, like half the time it's less about me actually playing the game and staring at the world. Like when Bioshock came out, and you get thrown into Rapture for the first time, I think I might have spent at least an hour, at least maybe a good chunk of the time just staring at models. Not models in terms of like, but like actual textures and you know, weird posters thrown around the world and trying to absorb and learn about this fictional world that, you know, isn't, you know, knowing that somebody spent hours figuring out, okay, well, this tree should look like this and it should be like this. And it follows a style because that's the Art Deco style of this period and everything else. I mean, is that what drew you to games? Was the idea of that? I'm assuming just because you mentioned your gamer.
Yeah, I started out with the Nintendo world. I mean, the whole Mario, Zelda, you know, that whole thing, Animal Crossing, that whole thing.
Animal Crossing.
You what?
Nothing wrong with Animal Crossing.
Oh, no, I love Animal Crossing.
Don't feel bad about
that. Oh, I don't at all. I'm not apologizing. But yeah, I mean, it's similar. And, you know, You're play acting a character, whether it's, you know, Animal Crossing or it's Fallout 4, you're playing a character. And I think, like, I really agree with what you said. A lot of times starting a brand new game, and I remember it's a totally different kind of game, obviously, but when I started City Skylines, I basically just ran around plunking things on the ground in a completely haphazard order because I just wanted to look at them, you know,
because City Skylines is what SimCity should have been, or SimCity 4 should have been, but that's neither here nor there.
Oh, yes, it is, though. SimCity 4 was very disappointing. I was very disappointed in that game. Oh, gosh, they let me down with that game.
Well, because, Max is, and now we're going into specific games, but forget it. Who cares? The conversation's going. Maxis was this developer, and this is sort of what I imagine is in your head, too. I mean, because, like, my first real true introduction into SimCity was SimCity 2000.
Yes. Well, actually, no. What was the one right prior to that one?
SimCity proper or any of the other.
Okay.
Because there's like for me, I played SimCity proper a bit, but like my real like where I really dug, you know, sink my teeth into actually being city manager and planner was 2000, and it was funny because in middle school, there was this group of I guess engineers or something along those lines, that the idea was. Yeah, this is how you know, we talk about being nerdy and geeky, and I've said this before, and I've told this before, but there's this thing called Future City Planners, where literally you'd make a city in SimCity 2000.
Okay.
And then port a section of that city into a model, and then you compete against other schools explaining how your city worked. And if you want to talk about, like, fantastical elements and crazy things, and while now there might be some science at point, the kids didn't know it. I think one of the people that won, their city was powered through gathering microwaves from the, like, some, you know, somewhere. Again, weird.
That's very
crazy
creative
stuff. But that's, you know, if you really think about SimCity 2000, there's a whole lot of bullshit in that game. But that's not even there. But literally, it was funny because, like, we would build these models in SimCity 2000. There was this expansion you could buy called the Urban Renewal Kit.
Yes, I had that.
There you go. Okay,
well, have the Urban Renewal Kit.
So for those who don't know, it basically allowed you, it was almost like Minecraft creative mode in that you could do whatever you wanted. You know, you didn't have to, you know, make anything. You could just immediately just start spawning Arcos and having fun and making this really creative looking city.
Yes.
But the minute you'd put it into the game, if you didn't, you know, it'd be this, like, you don't know what you're doing, and it, you know, you'd make this magical city that just kind of collapsed in on of itself. And I think that's what happened with us, is that we had to just play it for a bit, and we got it sort of working, and then we stopped. And that was like enough time to, like, justify it or something. Like, somehow that all worked out in the rules. I really don't remember any of the thing like that, but it was just so funny. Like, that was the game for me that I sunk my teeth into, and I think my next Sim experience wouldn't be until, like, I got a copy of Sim Tower.
Oh my gosh, Sim Tower. I completely forgot about that till you mentioned it. Sim Tower. I can still hear the sounds of the elevators going up and down in Sim Tower.
I still have nightmares of building condo floors and making sure that I don't put a hotel room next to it.
Oh, I know. Oh my gosh. Well, I'm having, like, Sim Tower flashbacks. It's very stressful. I was going to ask you, with all the SimCity games now, how often did you go into the game and shut off all the disasters and all the people yelling at you about finances just so you could build things? So I
would be quite opposite, actually, because at a certain point in the game, because, like, for me, a lot of it was I enjoyed the idea and the challenge of figuring things out, of figuring out how to keep things. Like, for me, I always enjoy the idea of making an ecosystem that can kind of live and thrive on its own, that I don't have to do anything with, that I can just say, all right.
So are you more analytical in how you?
I'm more of a hands-off kind of guy. I'm more of a if the machine is working and the machine's doing exactly what the machine should be doing, I'm not going to fool with it because it's doing. I have got the machine to work.
Set it up and let it roll.
Right, exactly, and then, you know, start adding things and figuring out, because a lot of times for me, it wouldn't be the mission of, like, let me destroy this thing. It'd be like, all right, let me get this working, get this much money, so that now I can finally build that stadium. I can finally hit that, you know, that next peak. I can finally get to the next part of the engine that I want to try, or like this.
It's the park. It's the monument.
Yeah, exactly. It's the victory points. It's that kind of thing where it's like,
exactly,
I want to get to that next thing, and everything's working fine. But after a certain point, that would get boring. even for me. And I'm like, you know what? I am curious. What does the tornado look like in this game? What happens when an earthquake goes wrong?
4 days of work on SimCity.
And it's like, because it's more of, again, and this is where the developer side becomes of me, is that I know someone worked hard on these destructions. I know someone worked hard on their, you know,
right.
Somebody who's a huge fan of Godzilla, you know, and that kind of monster film worked really hard to get things going. And who am I as a person who turns off disasters because I don't want to deal with the random element of it? The random element always annoys me because it's always like just out of nowhere, you know, giant monster comes in. Like, that's not realistic or even fun. But I like the idea of like, well, I'm curious, what happens when Mothra attacks my town? how does my town deal with Ghidorah and Mechagodzilla? what fiend will come down the pipeline now? And I'll click and do it, you know, quickly save the city and do a disaster. One, because again, I am curious, like, well, what if fire breaks out? Okay, interesting. What happens when a nuclear, you know, what does it look like visually when a nuclear reactor goes kablooey, and, you know, and it becomes, you know, some you know, Chernobyl, you know, in my world.
I'm just seeing Tondagasa in the chat saying it was a disaster film before it became popular, and that's true. You would kind of build your city and then create your own disaster film, and well, there's much yelling
there, and it's if you add a menu to a thing, chances are I'm probably going to try it. Like it wasn't like the cheat thing, but they added, like, because I remember even in I think it might have been the first Age of Empire. Like, there was a cheat you could enable where it added the menu to, like, add things.
Mm-hmm.
And there was nothing more fun for me to do in that game than to cheat and to immediately, like, have, you know, start from the very beginning where you have, you know, tribal people and you know, getting basic fire and flint tools. And here I am introducing nuclear weapons and race cars for no apparent reason because I can. It's like here I am, alien god of technology, dropping upon you something you have no idea how to handle. Deal with it. And it just became this, again, making this fantastical world, this sort of idea of taking something way more fun, you know, way more like set grounded in some type of reality and just skewing with it, just having fun. I mean, that might be why I love like BioShock, not because it's this fantastical thing, but because it's anachronistic past or future, or whatever.
Right.
You have like,
well, yeah, and Fallout 4 is the same way. It's its own universe, a totally different universe. I was going to ask you too. Something that I've been doing lately is playing modded Minecraft, which I'm probably going to start doing on Twitch soon. Have you tried modded Minecraft? Do you like that?
Yeah, I do actually. I've played some mods of Minecraft. A lot of it is Minecraft. I've always felt is a very, very, how do I best explain it? Minecraft is like one of those kind of games that I will play, enjoy, and create something, and then I'll flip on YouTube.
And
I will see, look at me, I have made the Sistine Chapel.
And the Colossus of Rhodes. And yes.
I have recreated the first level of Mario World.
Like, oh boy.
Well,
you know, I'll agree with you. That can be a bit disheartening. However, I think you almost have to look at Minecraft, especially modded Minecraft, as almost different categories of Minecraft. Because there's survival Minecraft, which is about fighting, which I have there's a server that I play that with on some friends. It's quite fun. It's just kind of ridiculous running around, you know, yelling, swatting zombies, swatting skellies, all that kind of thing. That's fine. But I think the people that are ambitious enough to build those amazing things, I will just download them and go walk through them and look at them. Much like we were talking about, we're kind of on a fantastical worlds thread, which I think is quite cool. But like you were talking about when you start a video game up and you just want to go walk through and look at everything. It's similar to me with those kind of constructions. For my own building, I don't know. I like to just kind of take the landscape and make something out of it, make a town, you know, and kind of leave that really complicated, those huge, massive builds to other people. I haven't really gotten into that kind of building yet. I just think it's fun to kind of, again, create a world of your own with the Minecraft thing. And the mods make it fun because there are so many other things. As you know, vanilla Minecraft is very plain. You know, there's a limited level of blocks and things.
It's gotten a lot better, but you're absolutely right.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But when you add mods to it and you can build with so many other types of blocks and, you know, all kinds of things, it just makes it so much more fun.
Okay, what's your mod of choice, though? Because there's
many mods
out there. Like, I mean, because I say that because, like, at one point, there was one of the mods that was introduced on a video that I started fooling around with. It's like a space mod where you could literally go to the moon and like a rocket ship and stuff like that.
I like Texit. I don't know if you've tried that. There's Tekkit and Texit, too. And Texit is really fun to me because it just has, you know, as far as building, there's a pile of different blocks. And I think that's actually, I want to say that's part of Texas. Is that Space Mountain part of Texas? It may be. But something similar to that, you know. But Texas is one of my favorites. I use that one a lot.
Yeah, because I think that one, like, introduced, I know, like, it introduced a lot of, like, pipes and oil and other resources to gather, I think.
Mm-hmm. Is that I think that's the construction one where you can actually build your own machines and they function and... Yeah, that's pretty fun too. I'm not quite good at that. I'm better at the decorating.
Interests me too, because again, it would be this. Because what I liked about Minecraft a lot, especially when they added things like redstone, was you know like what was like the idea of like, oh, I can make a switch that does something far,
actually
far
works.
Away. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that became fun for me. It was like, all right, I'm build this long thing for the redstone, and that way it flips open the door in the over there, and then I can flip it remotely. Because like, that was always fun. Was the idea of like, can I make something that. You know, like a lot of times in my world of Minecraft, and this is sort of typical what I do, a lot of people will build structures, and I'll do that too to a certain degree, but I've always liked building like underground tunnels, or like, you know, like one of the things I think at one point, I never ever got it done, but I really tried to, was built my own version of the tunnel, you know.
Oh, very nice.
You know, because like, I always enjoyed like, you know, building something underneath, but I want to make it kind of cool and weird. So I remember I got like a ton of glass and started to build this sort of glass sort of tunnel underneath the water. And it became this, its own thing that when you're walking through, you just see this like water all around you. You know, for me, it was always that, you know, when you think of like video games and other things, you know, other kind of sci-fi worlds, there's always the underwater tunnel that you see, like all the fish swimming around. And for me,
I did similar when they added all the. I think that it might be the Texit mod or a different mod. I can't remember, but they added all kinds of fish, different colorful fish, in addition to just the, you know, the squid and that sort of thing. And I remember building. Oh, it's a while back, but I built like a giant underwater like viewing dome thing. You could just go, and there were little benches to sit, and it was very convenient. You could go like you're going to a museum and go sit and watch the fish. That's just fun. It's fun trying to recreate kind of. Real life experiences in Minecraft, because it's plus the challenge of, you know, everything's square. So you've got that going for you.
But even the idea of you thinking of putting benches in there, you know, and I say that because a lot of Minecraft, you know, it's, you can't sit anywhere. You really, you know, you sort of build and you're sort of this blocky thing. But the idea of like, I built a bench here, not because I'm going to sit in this bench or even anyone who's going to visit this world is going to sit in this bench.
True.
But just the idea that there are people who are in this world who may come by and sit on this bench, you know,
exactly.
There's a thought went in your head of saying, well, this world is living in some capacity.
It needs a bench.
Right.
This needs a bench.
Right. And that's the stuff that kind of blows my mind when thinking about it, because there'd be people who would, you know, and you'd see people make sort of chairs out of like a step and like two wooden signs,
mm-hmm.
because they'd kind of add the arms or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I just like, I've never thought about doing that. And it would be this, you know, the idea of like lights and stuff like that. I go like, why do you need it? You just put a torch there. Because again, there's a pragmatic approach to playing Minecraft. Like you can just.
And there's an aesthetic approach to playing Minecraft where
right.
you want things to.
And
yeah, exactly.
The aesthetic one always impressed me the most because that required forethought, but also the idea that they would think, here is the world I'm going to be. You know, this is the world I have here. This is a living, breathing thing. Some, you know, someone's going to, I say someone meaning the fictional someone is visiting this and sitting down and has a house here and has started a life here. You know, I need to make sure this world looks a certain way to have it. It's one of those things that I really enjoyed the heck of, for sure.
Me too. And there always has to be cake. You must have cake in every house you build in Minecraft. There has to be cake.
Of course there must be cake. Cake is a lie. It's interesting because I think we're almost out of time. We're not quite at the hour, but we're a little we're approaching it very, very soon. I guess I gotta ask, because this is something that caught my eye looking at stuff. And you mentioned, you know, that you're when it comes to acting, you've done ADR work, you've done some voiceover work, and you know, every actress and you know, creative, especially when it comes to being represented by an agency, has a resume. Chrissy Cates is no different. And I always look through everyone's resume because I always seem to find something interesting and intriguing and something that I don't know if they even remember they talked about and did.
Uh-oh.
and this is listed under the specifically around the other section. It's actually where it says her characteristics and whatnot. You know, it lists things that are, you know, typically on a resume. you know, computer skills, character voices, I guess badminton is something you need to know about acting. But there was a section listed accents.
Oh, dear. Yes, Roberto, how may I help you?
Let us go through them. No, because it was interesting of like seeing, like, I've never thought of like half these things, because it's like vocal range, and you get the things that are typical, like, you know, mezzo soprano, whistler, you know, like things that if I were a person that was like, well, I need a, you know, a certain person for a musical, and it's got to be this sort of thing, and it was the female lead. Oh, you know, that's the kind of voice at range I need.
Well, and it's funny when you're listing these things too. Like when you're sitting down with your agent, they're having you fill these forms out to do these things. There's a very long list of odd things that you're supposed to circle and or check mark as far as what you can do. And, you know, in marking them down, you think, well, who can't whistle? I mean, or why would you need to whistle? Oh, we'll put it down. Someone might need a whistle for something someday. And it's just, it seems absolutely ridiculous when you're filling it out. But, you know, you end up doing work sometimes that you need some of these really odd things that you just don't think are very distinctive or matter very much.
Well, because like on the list is like licensed driver, and I guess it's important, but
well, and because in Manhattan, which is where my agency is, a lot of people don't drive.
I guess a good point.
So yeah, if you're on set and they need a driver, then you're able to drive and play that role where you're driving a car. Some people cannot drive a car.
Okay, that makes a lot more sense.
Yeah,
that clears up that one.
Yes.
It doesn't, however, clear up the fact that you have listed as hillbilly under accents.
What? How can I help you with that? You don't seem to understand that, you know, when you get called to do a role, I don't know, I just don't think you understand what it's like to be a hillbilly.
The one that I think intrigued me, because I don't know what it sounds like, and I'm curious. Midwest, is that just normal voice at that point?
Oh, well, there's something called broadcast standard,
right,
which is, you know, which is just your kind of typical American clear speaking with very little regional accent to it. Midwestern, I think. Oh gosh, I don't know how to explain it.
That's always what I've been told. What, like, and this is something, you know, I've heard many times, where they'll send broadcasters to the Midwest
right,
to lose their accent. I typically have been said, like, I mean, I grew up in Michigan, so I did grow up in the Midwest, where I don't really have any sort of
distinctive accent.
Right, exactly.
Right.
And so, you know, I know many friends who have too, but that's one thing I was like, Midwestern, is that what they officially call it now? Like, it's, 'cause I know broadcast standard makes a whole lot of sense. That I've just never.
Yeah, broadcast never standard, but I think Midwestern is almost perhaps a little bit less enunciated, and maybe, like, you know, you're going to go down to the Target and pick up some things at the Target, and then maybe you kind of like drop your R's out of everything. So you don't have an R in there too much when you're talking. So if you're going to go to the store, you kind of lose the R's fall away. Makes any sense. So,
and only because there are two listed, and I think I know the difference.
Okay.
But I want to know the difference.
You torture me, Roberto.
Yeah, well, I have to, because you don't list BBC English accent, British Cockney accent, and I think I know the difference, because I mean, Cockney is. Here's your quick trivia question. Here's your quick knowledge point, people. For those who have no idea, Cockney is what you think of when you think of English accents.
Right, Governor. It's not really what we think of as an English accent, because it's not really. It's more of a cartoon English accent than any other kind of accent you might do.
That's the exact.
Yes,
that's
like exactly the faux Cockney English accent that is
Cockney. I jokingly say that's the accent because it's what everyone's like. Oh, Governor, you know, like that's what goes through the American's mind when they think of of an English accent, not necessarily.
It's Mary Poppins.
That's the only accent. Always like, again, the. You know, I mean, obviously, one of the most famous implementations, I think, of Cockney in terms of stuff was would be like Mary Poppins and Dick.
That's
Van Dyke.
Yes, exactly.
You know,
exactly.
That's Cockney. It's horrible. It's horrible. It's a great accent, but it's horrible.
Well, I don't think it's necessarily horrible. It's actually a part of culture, and it's a part of Portobello Road, which is, you know, Portobello Road has its own accent as well. There's many different subcultures in England that have different accents. And as you expand out into Ireland and go up into Scotland, I can't even keep track. I have a friend who lives in Ireland, one of my best friends, and he often will sit down and he kind of enjoys picking apart languages. It's a hobby of his, I guess. And he'll describe to me all these, and I can't even keep track. There are so many different ones. And it just, it just depends on regionally, you know, where you were brought up, what part of the country you were brought up in. Whereas I think America, you know, you've got what we were speaking about, the broadcast standard. And then there's also the, and these are all, and you have to understand too, I think a lot of these are stereotypes. A lot of them are stereotypes. They're used for film. They're used for commercials. They're used for cartoons. They're meant to be funny.
That's why I asked, because it's one of those things of like, you see, because you're absolutely right when it comes to like you know, English accents. Like there are times where, depending on the video, like I've had to turn on subtitles, not because like just because I'll miss a word or two. I've gotten really good, especially when it comes to English, like listening to really deep English accents, I forget about it. And it wasn't until that I saw, like I showed my dad like some shows, like BBC shows I would be watching. They'd be like, "What do they say?" I go, "Oh shoot, you can't understand this deep of an accent. Let me turn on subtitles for you, Dad." Because it would be these, like, you know, if you get to a really, you know, especially like listening this past week of the whole the UK referendum, you know, I was going to keep it with BBC Live throughout the whole night. And you'd hear these really, really like deep, you know, and I don't know my region of the UK or England or Britain in general, as I couldn't say where they're from. But these really deep accents where it's like I caught like five of those words.
Some of them are very thick. And I mean, it's not even, this is so tricky. It's not even a derogatory thing. It's just the fact that, you know, the way they're enunciating their words is so different from the way we're enunciating our words. And then especially, you know, parts of England that lean more towards Wales, then things get very complicated in both spelling and pronunciation.
Well, because like it becomes a part of like, did they speak English or Welsh? And I don't know which is which anymore.
It seems very close sometimes to us with our American ears. I mean, it does seem very close, because when you look at ours, you have got broadcast standard. You have, you know, there are stereotypical accents on the East Coast of New Jersey has some very distinctive accents. Boston has a very distinctive accent. And then when you go out West, the stereotypes you find there are like, "Oh my God, I was like going to the mall and I like ran into this guy and he like wanted to sell me a purse. I should understand what his problem is." You know, then you have that kind of drawling, you know, the typical LA accent. So
yeah,
it's fun trying to do them and trying to approximate them, but you have to realize a lot of them are not terribly accurate. And at the same time, you run into people sometimes that actually do speak that way. And it's a bit surprising.
Well, cause with accents, especially with Boston, a lot of those, and this was, you know, you talk about language, like in college, as an English major, you have to take like I took at least one linguistics class where I learned a lot about how language came to the U.S. in that, you know, if you think about the idea that, you know, a certain crowd landed in, you know, in Maine and that sort of part of the shore, and in various parts of the shores, different crowds landed in terms of like Spain tend to land here and the French tended to land here and the English landed here and so on and so forth, that as people start moving, you know, more and more towards the center of the Midwest, a lot of those people sort of intermingling and talking and whatever. And so a lot of times that's sort of what happens with language, is that the further you go out in certain regions, like it's funny, but in the Ozarks, you can hear some hints of like old English actually in their accent.
Oh, that makes sense. Well, I think it's all the roots they're bringing in. And as the roots disperse throughout the country, they're going to, like you said, they're going to meet other people and blend with other people. And I think it's typical of us just as humans, whoever you're around, you kind of start to speak like them if you're around them long enough.
Yeah.
So, you know, I noticed when I was a kid and we were in England, I came back to America and I got made fun of in school for a good 6 to 8 months because I'd picked up a bit of an English accent.
Yeah.
Which was good later for voiceover work. But when you're a little kid, it's not fun to be made fun of.
Well, no, it's not, because like especially if you're saying like aluminium and
exactly.
Travesty and even even in word choice, you know, and a lot of this, you just I think now we've got to the point as sort of an internet culture that we kind of, you know, I know a little bit of English slang just because, you know, you talk with enough, you know, Brits online that you sort of learn these sort of things. But it's not like I use quid in my daily speak. It's not like I could call anyone a wanker, you know, out of an insult. Or it's not even like, you know, it's not like this means anything to anyone else but the UK. you know, jog off has an entirely different matter, you know, meaning here, you know, meaning there than it means here.
Well, and even right down to things like, you know, things like food. They're very, you know, they have an entirely different menu than we do. But that's any country, you know, and I think it's kind of cool because America is actually something we've we often forget, especially in times like what we're going through right now, we're a melting pot. We're fortunate to have all these different cultures, all these different foods, all these different languages, all these different people we can learn from. You know, we need to make the most of that, I think. I think that's a really cool thing to have and cool thing about the country.
Creole, which is a very American thing.
Oh, yes.
It's a pigeon language. It's a pigeon language of French and something else. I forget the other one off the top of my head. But that's something, a very American thing. And that's something that, you don't think about. Like, oh, Creole. Yeah, that's a Southern kind of thing. Like, no, that's very much American existence. Even Spanish in Texas and Mexico is different than Spanish spoken in Spain. You know, it's not.
Oh, yes.
It's not part of the Royal Academy.
Well, there's Mexican, Spanish, and Latin. Different base again you're speaking about. Yeah, you're exactly right.
Yeah, and so it's interesting, because we are absolutely that kind of thing. And it always makes me sort of angry when people don't kind of forget that and have sort of lost that just because.
Well, it's sad. It's just sad.
It is. We should end on something happy.
what you got?
Well, because there's one last thing on that list that we didn't talk about, and I'm kind of curious about it, especially because, you know, it's something you're doing now. It's something that's sort of becoming that, and that's podcaster. And I mean, obviously you've been on your guests in this show, you've been on guests on many other shows and everything else, but you're doing your own thing, the whole Monday Music News.
Yes. There's an interesting backstory to that, actually. My boyfriend had been watching Chord Killers and Night Attack and all those shows, and I wasn't terribly aware of them. You know, I was watching things here and there, but at one point he said, you know, you should really, you know, go be on this Chord Killer show. And I thought, oh, I don't, you know, I've never really podcasted. I mean, I've been in front of cameras, so it wasn't like a camera fright thing. It was just, I didn't know that world. And I started watching and I just said, wow, Tom and Brian are like just fun to talk to, very knowledgeable, just cool guys. You know, they know their stuff and it's a fun show to watch. And I thought maybe I could contribute something to this because, you know, something else I've done, you know, we don't have all day, but I've done a lot of music writing. I've written for a bunch of music magazines. I've interviewed bands.
You're the lead editor of, is it Pyxis magazine?
That's pronounced Pyxis. It's actually a word that means compass, the constellation compass. So it's,
I gotcha. Sorry, to make sure I wasn't sure.
No, that's fine. It's a weird word. But so I just thought, oh, maybe I can contribute something musically. They don't talk a lot about music on the show. Maybe that'd be helpful. So I just put together like a 2-minute video about music documentaries. And I emailed it to Tom and Brian, and they actually ran it on the show to my shock and delight. And then they started having me as a guest on the show. And that's how I got into it. They were very gracious and very welcoming. And then I started meeting the Diamond Club people and started doing more stuff. And I thought, well, I kind of want to contribute to this community. So Monday Music News is basically me taking the experience I've been fortunate enough to get from doing music writing and, you know, correlating music stories that happen and trying to break them apart and dig into them a little bit more and maybe put a little bit of my opinion in there, whether it's welcome or not.
I mean, see what other
people think in the chat room, too.
Well,
about
it's good because,
things.
I mean, like a lot of times with music, you know, especially I put this in quotation marks because it's one of those things that after a certain point, the term loses its meaning. The indie scene, I say it loses its meaning because it's just.
Like,
what do you define as independent music? Well, there's indie rock and there's indie this and indie that. And like, at a certain point, like, it just loses. It becomes just like, you know, a tag that you add to something to define it as being not done by a quote unquote big label.
Because that's a very good point. A very good point. And alternative music went through that same kind of transition where for a long time people were saying, oh, this is alternative rock. And it's like, you know, and the typical, you know, Smartar's comeback was alternative to what? But but alternative music and indie music both, I think, has now just kind of diluted into a couple words to explain music that is outside of the mainstream. You know, it's not your huge Beyonce record. It's not a massive U2 record. You know, it's something a little more eclectic, a little more, you know, I don't want to say thoughtful because I'm sure there's giant bands that do thoughtful songs, but I guess just something a little more on the edge. And those two words, alternative and indie, even though, you know, a lot of indie bands, as you said, aren't on indie labels, I think that's just come to mean maybe a little offbeat music, a little left field music. So it's kind of a weird thing, but
I'm just thinking of alternative music because, like, early days, I got into electronica. Mm-hmm. I didn't really know where to put electronica when it was kind of beginning things like, you know, the Prodigy were just starting and stuff. It was always like I would always be in the alternative section. Because all the bands I was into, they didn't quite know what to do with, you know, back in the
alternative 90s. Became the dumping ground for like, I'm not sure.
Yeah, it became this weird dumping ground. Everything was, it was such a funny thing you bring up because it's like, alternative is just a dumping ground where it's like, here's Nirvana, here's Prodigy, and right next to it is NoFX.
Punk. Yeah.
It's because we don't know what to do with these bands in record
exactly.
store. It's like, okay, well, cool. I guess this is where I'm supposed to be as the weird nerdy kid who didn't quite understand. It was always like with science fiction. They'd always dump, like at Blockbuster, they always dump science fiction and anime together because...
Sure. Why not?
No one knows where to put Ranma. I guess we'll put it next to Blade Runner, which, don't get wrong, was good for me because that really expanded my region of like, ooh, what's this Blade Runner movie? Oh, this is awesome.
That made you willing to dig, though, because those, you know, kind of doing those lumping together things, you would probably end up digging through those racks and looking for something in particular and run across something else.
Oh,
so
yeah.
Maybe it was fortuitous for you that they did that.
Very much so, because that was what got me into a lot of the stuff, was just because you'd be in this section mm-hmm. and you'd see like the Wipeout 3 soundtrack next to, you know, again, this rock band, like, who the heck is this? Or you at least get it in your head, and then, you know, I go home and quickly, you know, do a search online or find an MP3 as a kid and listen to it, and then go back and buy the album, because or there are certain stores you could actually, like, and this is, you know, dating myself, where you could go and actually preview a CD before you bought it. I mean, amazing, you know, buying, you know, listening to music before you bought it. That's horse. Because again, being in this sort of weird space of music, you never were quite allowed to hear that on the radio. Not because not because no one could play it. It's just no one played it. No one, you know, unless it got big or became a hit. That's the only time you ever really truly heard it.
Well, like the British music we were talking about earlier, you had to dig up something like, you know, a V radio or an XFM because you weren't going to hear it stateside. You just weren't.
Exactly.
It just wasn't being played.
I mean, growing up, a lot of it was like Japanese radio, Japanese music and an anime fan. So a lot of times you just kind of get lumped in this, because again, a lot of people didn't buy it and they still had it in stock. And, you know, you hope to sell something as a music store. That's your mission mm-hmm. in life. You know, you don't just carry stuff, and it wasn't like I grew up in a place that had a lot of like really eclectic tastes. You know, I grew up in the suburbs there in you know, around Grand Blanc, and a lot mm-hmm. of times we go to, you know, it wouldn't be like, oh, we're gonna go to, you know, to Amoeba Records or something like that. It'd be like, no, we're gonna go to the mall, and there's FYE, and whatever FYE has is you're able to buy, and it,
right.
it would be like, okay, well, I know where my stuff usually is, and you'd see me make this weird beeline over to like the alternative, and like alternative. All right, here's electronic, you know, be like dance, and it would be this mixture of things I've already had or not had, and next door would be this other thing that I have to look at too, and because it'd always be this sort of section of like, here is your fun land, and it was always interesting to see that, because yeah, that's sort of how it got into. Because again, I kind of tie it back into podcasting and tie it back into that.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's important to kind of expose people to a lot of different things. And I think approaching it from you, because I, you know, looked at your articles as well. Like, you've interviewed like the Decemberist. You've interviewed like so many different people over sort of writing, you know, I say real, you know, music things. I think there's no such thing really real anymore, but the idea of like respected publications or whatever, you know, that kind of thing. But
certainly,
you know, you've interviewed also, you know, for lack of better words, respected musicians. I'm saying that, you know, not no one else isn't respect it's
oh, I know exactly what you mean. I know what you mean. I mean, just some bigger names, some people that have gotten a little bit further ahead. I've been very fortunate. I mean, some of the ones that really stand out are just, I think what's cool is talking about the ones that maybe it's always nice to talk to any musician, just because you get that insight and you get to kind of dig into what makes them tick and what makes them create things. But for me, I mean, interviewing OK Go and Rufus Wainwright and Frank Turner was a really cool one. And, you know, like you mentioned, the Decemberists, They Might Be Giants were super fun to interview. It's fun to just talk to them.
I am jealous. Like, if there is ever a band over the time I'd love to interview, like They Might, like TM, They Might Be Giants, maybe one of those bands, especially like as a kid, you know, and a lot of kids in the 90s probably got their introduction to They Might Be Giants through things like Tiny Toon. And as a
totally.
And it wouldn't be until years later that I learned that Istanbul, not Constantinople, isn't originally a They Might Be Giants song. It's actually a cover of an older, so, you know,
yes,
it's things you learn as you get older and stuff like that. That was my introduction to them, was this weird Tiny Toons music video, two of them. Like, that was like my the highlight of that episode was that and Particle Man. And that would lead into me buying for, like, I think the first They Might Be Giants album was Flood.
Awesome. And it's a great album.
It's an amazing album.
Good
one
choice.
Of my favorite, one of my favorite songs in there still is Dead. Like, still one of my favorite They Might Be Giant songs. In fact, to the point where I think I think it was what is that? I'm blanking on the band that does opening. There was an indie band, a nerd band. But I can't remember the damn name of it. It's this is where we're having Paul and Storm. I can't believe I blanked on Paul and Storm. They were doing a live show with Jonathan Coulton, and I think either Coulton or one of them said, "We're going to play a song that's inspired by They Might Be Giants," and they start singing the song, and I'm like, I know what song you're riffing on just based on the style and the singing. And it was Dead. Uh-huh. Specifically. It wasn't, they weren't singing anything of it, but it was like very much sounded like Dead. I was like, yeah, that's so funny. I was like laughing, 'cause it's like, you got the song. Yeah. Good job. But then you see your world, my world start to cross over because, you know, growing up, and seeing things like Homestar Runner and then seeing They Might Be Giants come up, and they're just like, oh crap, my worlds are crossing over. Hooray. Things are happening. This is all making sense now.
Yeah, and there's so much more of that now too, the crossover thing that you mentioned, just in all genres. So yeah, it's happening a lot more now. So maybe that was like the forerunner to that, the precursor. Yeah.
I mean, yeah. And that's happening. So we are at the hour mark. We've hit this point in time of this. So I guess, you know, I ask every creator this, especially when someone's doing all sorts of stuff and is venturing out, you know, in your case, into the world of podcasting now. But, you know, you still have music, you still have all this sort of thing. So I guess I'll ask it. What's next? What's on the horizon?
Oh, what's next?
What's the score here? Well, What comes next?
I would actually like to record an EP. I'm hoping to get that done by next year. I've got a lot of songs written, a lot of songs I really want people to hear. I plan to start playing some of them live for Twitch and Diamond Club people. I haven't done that in a while just because I've been doing some moving and changing houses and things get hectic, you know how it goes. And I just feel like I've kind of neglected my favorite thing to create. So I need to get back to that. Monday Music News is going to continue. I hope people like that. I'm going to try to expand it and add some more features to it, get it a little longer. And I'm planning next year to chase after more voice work. I really want to get into doing more film work on camera and ADR work. Animated features would be something I'd love to do. So yeah, I guess I'm going to keep making that list longer, Roberto.
I'll try anyway. Look, if anyone can make it longer, it is definitely you. Because again, seeing the list and we didn't even talk about, like we mentioned, the writing and I was looking at the articles and everything else. We didn't talk about a lot of the stuff that you list under your name of stuff that, again, it was we didn't even mention the tea part and that was on your Twitter profile. And I'm jokingly saying that. But let's say people want to actually, you know, keep up with all stuff. Let's say that they're intrigued. They now want to juncture into listening to your stuff. How can they find you online these days?
Oh, well, that would be lovely. I'd appreciate that. I am at ChristyCates.com. I have a very basic web page up right now that just has links to everything. It's KristyKates. I'm very active on Twitter. And you can find the Monday Music News on Diamond Club. My music will be able to be found through ChristyCates.com and also through Twitch. So thank you. Very kind words from you. I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Not a problem at all. Of course, you can find me. I'm at Vincent404 there on the Twitters. If you want to comment on this podcast, join that conversation, head to our website, cosmicradio.tv/8bitlife. You'll find links to the show notes, previous episodes, our Twitter account for the show, which is at 8bitlife podcast. And of course, other shows on this network. And of course, after you've bought and contributed to whatever Christy Cates is doing, and you have like 5 cents left over, maybe $1.50 or $1.95, head over to patreon.com/8bitlife to help this show become bigger, better, and more awesome.
Yeah.
So that's it for today. Until next time, I talk to another geek about something completely and utterly random. Bye, people.
Bye.
This has been a CosmicRadio.tv audio production. For more awesome shows, head on over to our website, CosmicRadio.tv.